So after Yahweh told us that the religion that refers to their God as the Lord, and that has a Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, a virgin with child, that celebrates Easter and Christmas, that after he tells us that that religion, which would be Christianity today, is harmful and immoral and worthless and corrupt, he then tells us that as a result of embracing it, of believing it, of accepting it, all of those who have done so have rejected and abandoned Yahweh. It's religion or relationship, folks. It's God or government. That's your choice. You can't have both. Ever. Can't even have a little bit of one. And expect God to accept you. God won't even allow you to engage in a relationship with you, much less save you, much less adopt you, much less include you into his covenant, much less invite you into his home, if you are religious. And one of the defining aspects, the first and most defining aspect of being religious is referring to your God as the Lord. Now that ought to really wake some people up.
You would hope.
Because if you read the Babel, the corrupt, confusing text that means with the Lord, with Baal, that Christians lug around, there are 7,000 times that Yahweh wrote his name, Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh, that they replaced it with Satan's title, the Lord. Wow. Talk about upsetting God. Talk about troubling.
Kind of slapping him in the face.
I don't think there's anything you could do that would be worse. I don't think it's a single thing you could do that's worse. Do you not see what they do in the cities and towns of Yehuda and in the public places of Jerusalem? The children, they gather and collect the wood, the fathers light the fire, and the women manipulate the dough, rolling it in their hands to make the devotional cakes. All for the Queen of Heaven. And for these reasons, by pouring out holy drink offerings to approach and follow other gods, they provoke me to rage, to anger, to view them with absolute disgust. You know, the drink offerings and the little cakes that they're making?
Communion?
Do you think that those drink offerings and little cakes, do they exist in Christianity today?
Absolutely.
Yeah, what do Roman Catholics call the experience with the special drink offering and the little wafers?
When they do the communion.
It's called Eucharist in the Roman Catholic Church.
Catholic.
Yeah, it's the most solemn event in Roman Catholicism. I mean, there are people that go every single morning
to
participate in the Eucharist. And in Protestant Christianity, if you've identified yourselves as formerly a Protestant, I was formerly a Protestant. In fact, I even served as a ordained ruling elder in the Presbyterian Church. I even served communion. Mm-hmm. And, of course, God doesn't have a communion. He doesn't have a Eucharist. And he's condemning it here. Everybody participates. This is also making the hot cross buns of famous for Easter. Everybody is a family. Isn't Easter a lovely family event? They were celebrating Ishtar. Ishtar is Easter. It was named after this goddess. They were celebrating. They were making these cakes. They were all celebrating Easter together. Wow. And God said, it provoked me to anger. You know, all the people that get up and go to their Easter sunrise service, so they celebrate Easter with the Easter bunny that lays eggs, which was a sign of Ishtar because she was a fertility goddess. And so they're doing it thinking, well, these are, that and Christmas, because 9 months later, after Mother Earth, the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of God, was impregnated by the Sun, by Baal, the Lord. She gave birth to the Son of the Sun, the Nativity, Christmas. And they do these things. They think that they're somehow being godly and religious and pleasing their God. And what does it say? Does it say, oh, yeah, it tickles my fancy to see them do this? Oh, so what if they're a little confused?
Yeah, it was words not confusing.
No, they provoke me to anger. They increase my displeasure, my sorrow and sadness. They annoy me. Religion annoys God. God's not neutral on religion.
No.
He's disgusted by it. So Yahweh could no longer endure the unfolding consequence of. He could not even overcome nor comprehend the protestations which were repeating again and again with regard to the actual lifting up, the promotion of, and the genuine and universal acceptance of the presence of absolute wrong, of grievous evil, of the horribly troubling nature of your abusive and insulting practices and ruthless dealings because of the presence of the detestable abominations, the confounding deceptions, the repulsive rituals associated with idol worship, which you have engaged in. You know, when God says, I can't endure it anymore, when God says, I can't even overcome it, God says, I can't comprehend it. Don't you think you're maybe out on a limb that is dead and decayed, that God's saying, even I can't fix this? God can't save you from religion. Can't.
Well,
God can't save you from his church. He can't save you from the mosque. God can't save you from religion. He says, I don't comprehend it. I can't endure it. I can't overcome it. Now, there's a limitation. God has lots, by the way, there's lots of limitations of God. And he's saying right now, if you're religious, I can't save you from it. He says, if you're religious, I can't comprehend it. He says, if you're religious, I can't endure it. Do you ever take a whack at Lo Yaakov? No longer capable of understanding?
No, I haven't.
I'm not capable of prevailing over it?
Right.
It was the call, hopeful, passive stem, meaning this is a literal rather than a nuanced communication, actual and genuine. God is saying, I genuinely can't comprehend this. I can't actually overcome it. That is, imperfect connotations, meaning that it's unfold and habitual over time, constant and continue with ongoing consequences. God says, I'm never going to be able to endure it. I'm never going to be able to comprehend it. I can never overcome it.
And we shouldn't be so disappointed when so few people respond. If he can't overcome it.
Yeah. God's saying, I can't endure religion. So are there going to be any religious people in heaven? If God can't endure religion?
Not a chance.
Not a chance. Can God reason with you and justify religion when he says, I can't comprehend it?
No.
Now, when God says, I can't save you from it, I can't overcome it, what that means is that you can't be saved from religion.
No, only you can walk away from it.
You have to walk away from it. Right. Now, God can save the unreligious, but he can't save the religious. That's about as powerful as any statement could possibly be. I can't overcome religion. I can't save you from religion. I can't resolve it. Can't fix it. If you're religious, you are beyond my capacity to resolve that problem.
To me, that's mind-blowing.
Yeah. Now, the reason that's the case is that the first condition of the covenant is to walk away from your country, to walk away from Babel, to walk away from the corrupt and confusing Christian Bible, to walk away from an affinity for the Lord. It's to walk away from the whore of Babylon. It's to walk away from Christianity. That's the first requirement of the covenant. And so until you do that, you can't even embrace the second, third, fourth, and fifth conditions of the covenant. And if you don't act upon the covenant, you can't have a relationship with God, can't be part of his family, can't enter heaven, can't be saved. That's why God's saying, I can't resolve this. Unless you first walk away from religion, I can't invite you into my home. I can't perfect you.
Notice the blow there to Christianity where where he does everything and you do nothing. You have to participate in this. You have to do this.
Yeah. You know, the idea in Christianity, doesn't matter how bad you are, that so long as you pray the little sinner's prayer, it's all a matter just that you uttered their prayer.
And that little prayer.
And God said, no. If you opt to be religious, I can't help you.
And then you start praying on top of it, and I really can't help you.
No, yeah. Yeah, how many times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms does Yahweh ask you to pray to him?
Zero.
Zero.
Looked them all up.
Zero.
Five, six, eight pages on that stuff. Cannot find it there. I'm sorry.
How many times did he ask Adam to worship him?
One.
Yeah, that would be the same number.
Worship and praise are not high on his list either.
Yeah. Zero means none. None. Mm. Not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he ever even demand to Adam, hey, you better thank me for creating you?
No, you know, he gave, he got down on his knees to lift Adam up in love, and he engaged in a relationship with Adam. And as Richard wrote me the other day and was talking about, you know, how I was talking about how Eden and the relationship Yahweh had with Adam in Eden is synonymous with our life with Yahweh in heaven, synonymous with the promised land. And I said, you know, I'm positive that one of the things that Yahweh enjoys most, because he told us, is life. And that we together are going to spend time together enjoying life, experiencing life, the living organisms that Yahweh has created. And what Richard wrote me, he said, you know, what did Yahweh do with Adam relative to life? He allowed Adam to name them. To name them is to identify them, to describe them, to give them something that helps you understand them. And so Yahweh's idea, he didn't go and tell Adam, here's the names I gave for them. He says, here, I created them. You get to name them.
Well, you get to participate.
Yeah, participate.
Not only that, but look at all the people that he had go do things for them. They all ended up with better than what they started with. And the one time that he couldn't guarantee or he couldn't keep the person safe is the time that he diminished himself. He said, yeah. I'll take care of this one.
I'll take care of this for you. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I'll do this myself.
Not the one.
And if you walk with me, I'm going to take you away from slavery. I'm going to liberate you, and I'm going to take you into my home. I'm going to lead you all the way. Put you in paradise. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's. I mean, you have your, you know, Asher and things like that. But that right there, to me, is the part where it's like, that's awesome. Like
yeah.
that's the
part, God.
That's the part where you know,
a yeah, man has you bow down to him, and here I'm infinitely superior to man, and rather than bowing down to me, I want you to stand.
Isn't that something? I mean,
yeah.
He says, don't bow down to any man, don't bow down to any religion, any king, and
right.
He don't even ask you to bow down to him.
But, no, in fact, he says, I'm going to help you stand.
Yeah.
But to take that a step further, for me, that's the part where he earns the title father.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Because he's saying, yeah. Look, I can't protect you, so I'll take care of this. I'll do this.
Right.
And every other time it was, just listen to me. Follow what I'm saying, and you're going to come out better.
Yeah.
And in the one time that he couldn't protect his people is the time that he said, I'll do this. I got this.
Yeah, I'll do this. Yeah, I got this.
For me, that's the part where...
Right. Or even when the remnant of his children are being besieged in the Battle of Armageddon. Before that, when they're being besieged by Magog and they run out of bullets, there's just not enough bullets to hoard back the tsunami of Muslims coming into the Promised Land, Yahweh intervenes and says, I'll take care of this, and destroys them. And then during Armageddon, when they're besieging Jerusalem, beginning to rape and to plunder his children, he says, I'll take care of this. And he intervenes and turns them to goo.
Wow.
I'm going to take care of this. You know, when the Egyptians wouldn't release his children, I'll take care of this. When the Egyptians said, you know, with their military, I'm going to come after them and kill them, I'll take care of this.
And think of just,
you're thirsty, you're hungry, I'll take care of that.
Think about how that is, though, because that's exactly how you can't promise your kid he's never going to feel pain. You can't promise your son that he's never going to get break an arm or get in a car accident or anything like that.
Right.
You can't make that promise.
Right. But, in fact, you're better off having a child that has challenges and that you help them overcome them. Gives them character and backbone. Right?
100% agree. I wouldn't be the person I am today if my dad didn't let me meet challenges head on and help me overcome them rather than just taking care of it for me.
Exactly. And that's participatory. That's fathering correctly. That's the way that Yahweh fathers. He says, I'm going to give you the advice. I'm going to tell you what will work and what will be counterproductive. And I'm going to tell you what you can trust and what you should disrespect. Just like he's condemning religion here. I'm going to tell you what's trustworthy and what's not. And then, you know, it's your choice after that. You can do what you want. But if you choose to reject the things that I've told you are harmful, I'm going to uplift you. I'm going to provide you everything that you need to be successful. So long as you're willing to engage with me and listen to me. But if you're not willing to listen to me, there's nothing I can do for you. You know, I think that's why he says I can't overcome religion. Is that if you're religious, you have to reject his Torah testimony.
And you can't listen to both.
Right. And so if you're rejecting his Torah testimony because you've chosen instead to listen to the likes of Paul or Muhammad, there's nothing God can do for you because he's only got one testimony. Huh. Only one way, one plan. One direction.
Well.
So he said, I can't overcome. I can't make any sense of this. And what is it? It's not just the religion. It's protesting, repeating and again, this universal acceptance of and the promotion of. I mean, La Nasa means the universal acceptance, the promotion, the embracing of the protestations that are associated with promoting things that are wrong, troubling, harmful, immoral, corrupt.
Well, how do you understand somebody choosing death over life?
And that's what they've done here. Because of the detestable abominations, confounding deceptions, and repulsive rituals associated with idol worship. That's it. Tolba. It's a loathsome lifestyle of lies. It's abhorrent religious ceremonies and false statements from Ta'ab and To'ah. Degrading and confusing lies, troubling and despicable errors, abhorrent and untrue spoken arguments which mislead and bewilder. You know, when I was talking to my wife yesterday, and we were talking about the conversation with Jerry Falwell, I don't know how it came up, but I think it was because of the despicable nature of the most overtly Christian of the candidates, Ted Cruz, running for office, and him lying twice, getting caught twice for despicable lies in the Iowa caucuses, and yet still having Christian Republicans say that he shares their values. And I said, I'll never forget the six.
Go, right?
Yeah, way to go. I said, I'll never forget the six-hour conversation I had with Jerry Falwell, and the head of Liberty University. When I knew less than 0.1% of what I know today, and I listed all of the things that Jerry was promoting: Christian, Trinity, Jesus Christ, Christmas and Easter and Sunday worship, New Testament. I went through all of them, and that I had uncovered at that time. And after 12 pages of material that I had prepared for this meeting, and to have him at the end of it all say everything you've said is true, I wouldn't even attempt to refute any of it. But if I were to say any of this, which means that if I stop lying to the people, then there will be no one in the pews of my church, and the checks that support my university will stop arriving in the mail. Tells you that nothing has changed. These are ruthless, abusive, and insulting practices. And that they know that they're engaged in confounding deceptions because it's what's made them popular. It's what made them rich. And that the testimony of God is not enough to dissuade them. You know, that's the problem that, Larry, who we will do the evening show with, mm-hmm. the challenge that he has every time that he engages a Christian apologist.
Right.
Is God's testimony means nothing to them.
Therefore,
so if God's testimony means nothing to them, if they're going to reject it on behalf of their religion, how is God capable of helping them?
Can't.
I
mean, it's, when you're in a debate and you've beat somebody up completely on every point, and they say, well, I don't care, I'm still going my way. So what do you do?
What do you do? And that's exactly, by the way, what the Israelites said when after Samuel repeated all the 12 points, and we'll get
right,
to those 12 points in a subsequent
exactly.
show, all 12 points of what choosing government over God was going to do to them, they said, we don't care. We're going to choose the government, and we're going to choose a government that is modeled after the Gentiles. We're going to choose it anyway. And that's when God says, well, don't cry to me then,
man. But they've been free of the Palestinians, the Philistines.
The Philistines.
At that point, the whole time. They
of course.
They haven't
of course.
Had to
right.
do anything but be happy.
Yeah, be happy. Yeah, therefore, yeah. It has come to be that your realm is moving toward being ruined, toward something horrible, an object of scorn, where appalling and atrocious events were unfold as a result of the contemptible formulation of a curse, which diminishes your status, causing a person to become lowly and little, resulting in the absence of life. Well, that's loaded, too.
Yes, it is.
First of all, you look at Israel. They were they'd be haunted one more time by the Philistines. Not during Samuel's life. During Samuel's life, they were protected.
Right.
But they were haunted when they chose government and Saul tried to resolve it with politically and militarily, and they got just pummeled.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dodd would arise, and Dodd would unify Israel, and things were great until they decided that they would league with the Egyptians and league with the Assyrians and league with the Babylonians. And the Assyrians pummeled the northern kingdom, destroyed it, and would have destroyed Yehuda had it not been for Hezekiah returning to the Torah.
Right.
And the Babylonians later on hauled the Jews into captivity, pummeled the land. And the Greeks came through there as if it were like everything else that they had encountered in Persia. And then the Romans, oh my God, no one in all of human history was as vicious as the Romans, particularly. Talk about appalling. Look what Rome did to Israel. Not once, but twice. And then the Roman Catholic Church that grew out of it, with the most anti-Semitic rhetoric in the history of humankind. And then look at the Muslims, what they have done. Man, talk about a prophecy that came true, and that your realm will move towards being ruined, towards something horrible, an object of scorn, where appalling atrocities will unfold. And then you look at that period of time between 70 CE, when Rome came in and destroyed the temple and turned the temple the wealth they found in the temple when they destroyed it, they used it to fund the construction of the Colosseum, and they had Jewish slaves build the Colosseum, the most despicable arena to human decadence and to the worst of religion and politics and militarism in all of human history. Talk about
Apollo. I had an eerie feel about it. When I was there, I didn't even want to be around it.
Oh, I know. It just makes me sick.
I know the history of it, and probably that's what right. it is. But it's right. like my
60 years thereafter, Rome's back
yeah.
with Hadrian and trying to turn Jerusalem into a city named after him and the Temple Mount into a shrine to him. And Jews are crucified by the hundreds of thousands, and they're dispersed from the land, and the land is renamed. And then, in between, or just prior to the first Roman assault, you have a man who claims to be a Roman, who took on a Roman name, Paulos, which means lowly and little, and he enraged the world against Israel.
Yeah, it's plain.
Exactly. So it began in 50 CE with Paul in his first letter to the Galatians, where he despises Jews, despises them. 20 years later, the Romans come and destroy the temple. 60 years after that, they come and destroy the land. Three Romans. That's what was appalling. But God is predicting, because what is the name that the first of the Romans chose for himself?
Oh, the Paul. You mean to rename the place?
Shaul. What was Shaul's chosen name?
It was Paul.
What does Paulos mean in Latin?
It means lowly and little. That's why this is so.
So the appalling abomination, the appalling events that are going to unfold is a result of a contemptible curse causing a person to become lowly and little.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty poignant, don't you think?
Paul. Lowly and little. Paul. Resulting in the absence of life. As it is on this day. What does he say of Shaul Paul? The plague of death.
Plague of death.
That is about as Pauline, folks, as it gets.
Yeah. But nobody will leave Paul. They'll still quote him tomorrow.
No, the world.
After tomorrow, they will quote him as if he's the great
scumbag.
Revelation from God himself.
Yeah. Of all of the people who have ever lived, the single most despicable, deadly, demonic, destructive, in Yahweh's eyes, is the Apostle Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Most horrible human being that ever lived. And yet, every Christian Bible study focuses on what that despicable man wrote. Except they'll never do a Bible study on, well, you know, what he claimed was that he was demon-possessed.
No.
How do we deal with that? What he claimed is he was insane. How do we deal with that? He claimed that he pretended to be things that he wasn't just to gain an advantage over people. How do we deal with that? He claimed to be a sexual pervert. How do we deal with that?
Mm-hmm.
His Romans 7 argument that says the Torah is dead has to be the most inane, illogical, irrational, ridiculous arguments that's ever been made. When he said that governments were all godly institutions that we should submit to in a book written on behalf of the Romans, when God said it was the most vicious beast of all time, are we going to do a Bible study on reconciling that?
Well, no, we're going to have a prayer session for our president.
Yeah. So this is an overt condemnation of Pauline Christianity. This is what God is saying results in the absence of life. And if you're listening, if you're a Christian, walk away from it. Because, well, if you walk away from it, you're not guaranteed admission into Yahweh's home. At least you'll be open to the invitation. And we can tell you where to find it. Yahweh's Torah.